slow turn, circling the tower for a place to put it down. Vivid electrical storms raged like the after-images of titanic battles in the heavens, and the jagged peaks on every horizon were limned with electrical fire that spat traceries of lightning into the sky. Sentient zephyrs chased the Thunderhawk, scraps of febrile consciousness that flocked to men of power like acolytes to a high priest. Millions of them attended upon Magnus's tower, like the accretion rings of planets, or blood sharks with the scent of prey in the water. Ahriman angled the Thunderhawk around as an opening shaped itself in the upper reaches of the spire, and a shelf of glassy rock extruded from its substance. He feathered the engines and raised the craft's hooked nose as he brought it down with a gentle pressure of thought. He allowed the engines a moment to cool, before making his way to the assault ramp and descending to the tower. As always, he felt the charge in the air, the sense of potentiality that existed in every moment. Here, breath had power, and his was seized upon by the invisible zephyrs that flocked to him. Ahriman ignored them, and strode into the tower through an elliptical archway with edges that curved like a dancing flame. The space within was enormous, too vast to exist within the circumference of the tower, and lit in the soft glow of a librarium. Spiraling stacks and shelves groaned under the weight of myriad forms of knowledge. Parchments, scrolls, data crystals, hide-bound tomes, sigh songs and haptic memes, each bearing a fragment of priceless knowledge born from the sacking of Prospero. To an outsider, such a collection would appear extensive, a repository of knowledge unmatched by any beyond the great vaults of Terra. But to the Thousand Suns, these were scraps, a fraction of the accumulated wisdom gathered from the corners of the galaxy over the last 2 centuries. It made Ahriman weep to know that such irreplaceable wisdom had been lost for the sake of spite and jealousy.
Was it worth it, Russ?
Voice came from above, resonating with the sorrow of the ages. It was a voice that knew neither surprise nor joy, and was all the sadder for having once basked in such wonder.
Don't speak his name!
Father.
Why do you disturb me?
Ahriman could see no sign of his gene sire. The voice emanated from everywhere and nowhere. A disembodied spirit that could have been whispering in his ear or shouting from deep inside the librarium.
I wish to ask you something.
You did not need to travel to the Obsidian Tower for that.
No. But some things are best spoken of face to face. Father to son.
There was a pause. Then, a sudden swelling of presence. A fundamental change in the secret physics of the world. The librarian vanished, and Ahriman found himself at the very summit of Magnus's tower, raised above it as a god above his domain. The world curved away, as though he were a giant stood upon a globe, and he saw the fiefdoms of the warrior sorcerers who had escaped the final slaughter at the Pyramid of Fotep. From a legion of thousands, these paltry few remain.
We would like to live as we once lived. But history will not permit it.
But a small body of determined warriors, fired by an unquenchable faith in their mission, can alter the course of history.
The Crimson King, he was called. The Red Cyclops. Magnus of the One Eye. All these epithets and more had been heaped upon him. Some in praise, most in fear. The Magnus that towered above Ahriman was clad as he last remembered him, going out to battle the Wolf King in a howling storm of black rain. A blood-red breastplate, sheathed in twin horns of bone and draped in a mantle of amber mail. A kilt of sun-baked leather, edged in gold and stamped with an ivory representation of the Legion's serpentine symbol. His crimson hair was wild, the mane of a visionary or madman. The Primarch's features were bronzed and ruddy, yet beneath it all was a fiery light, the sun at the core of his being, simultaneously filling his fictive body with its radiance and self-creating it. That light shone strongest through his eye, a singular orb of gold, flecked with undreamed colors and hardened by the sorrow of one who rued the day he saw further than he ought. This was Magnus as he wished to appear. A demigod wrought in the image of a lost past by the memories and emotions of his favored son. Magnus was a being on the cusp of some great transformation, but where that would take him was a mystery to which not even he could know the answer. Ahriman fought the urge to drop to his knees. Since coming to the planet of the sorcerers, Magnus had demanded that none of his sons bend the knee to him, but some habits died hard. Contrary to outward appearances, the top of Magnus's tower was open to the elements, and the kaleidoscopic storms raging overhead were close enough to touch. Blistering energies of unimaginable power danced overhead, and their potency was an elixir in Ahriman's blood.
"It's quite something, isn't it?"
The Primarch spoke with the pleasure of a shared secret.
"It's incredible."
Magnus walked a slow circuit of the tower, and capricious arcs of lightning slithered around him as though he were a lodestone. Magnus felt Ahriman's stare.
"Like attracts like. The power in me is that of the great ocean, distilled through my reborn flesh into something purer, but still chaotic."
In the presence of Magnus, it was impossible not to feel like a helpless student at the feet of an omnipotent master. There was so much Ahriman wanted to ask, but he forced his tumultuous thoughts into the placid enumerations to focus himself.
"I have been working on something I think you should see."
"Yes, I know. You have been working tirelessly upon the flesh changed of late."
"You know."
Magnus turned and gave him a skewed look.
"Did you really think I wouldn't?"
Ahriman realized he had been naive to believe the Crimson King would be ignorant of his great work, but was still surprised at how transparent he must have been.
"This is why you intrude on my labors."
"Yes, my lord. I have read everything in the grimoire you entrusted to my care. And there is a spell that I believe will..."
"Why have you really come here, Azek?"
Ahriman walked at the edge of the tower, his cloak flowing around him in the winds from the volcanic plains below. Jagged rocks reared up from the base of the tower like black fangs in the mouth of a predator.
"Because I need your help. We cannot do this without you. We have learned much, but we are blind men searching for revelation in all the wrong places."
"So you wish my blessing and my help? Well, I do not give it. You are walking a dangerous path, my son. Trust me, I know the nobility that drives you. I felt it myself. But you would think that you had broken the curse of the flesh change only to be deceived by the very power you believed had brought you success."
"But surely, together, we could finally find an answer."
"No, I cannot help you. Moreover, I will not help you. And you are to cease all efforts in this matter. Do you understand?"
Ahriman felt his control of the enumeration slipping as he rose into a higher, combative stance.
"No, I do not."
Without seeming to move, Magnus swelled to become a towering giant, a feral beast of blood-matted fur with hardened skin. His single eye became a molten sun that pinned Ahriman in place, a carcass set for the spit.
"Your little cabal is no more. And woe betide he who ignores my warning or breaks faith with me. He shall be my enemy, and I will visit such destruction upon him and all his followers that from now until the end of all things, he shall rue the day he turned from my light."
Ahriman recognized the words and the bitterness that dripped from every syllable. Only one question remained to be asked.
"Why?"
"Because matters of greater import occupy my thoughts."
The awful threat and terrible danger faded from Magnus's eye as his physique returned to its former stature.
matters greater than your legion's end?
Magnus did not answer, and cast his eye to the raging storms of light above him, as though the answer lay within them. His features softened and took on a thoughtful cast.
Much more important.
Tell me, that I might understand why you abandon us.
Magnus nodded, and reached out to place a bronze-skinned hand upon his shoulder. The planet of the sorcerers fell away, like a shining bauble dropped down a darkened well.
I will do better. I will show you.
Ahriman felt a terrible dislocation, like the wrench of a teleport, but 100 times worse. His gen-enhanced frame, bio-engineered to resist the extremes of any environment, was suddenly that of a frail mortal, as his subtle body was ripped from his flesh. His body of light soared through the great ocean, borne upon the back of a fiery golden comet, a presence of such power that he dared not look directly upon it. He knew that this was Magnus, but in the trackless wildernesses of the great ocean, it was no longer constrained by any constancy of form. Stars and galaxies spiraled around him, an endless parade of random events that were not random at all. Everything proceeded to the design of fate's architect, a pattern so grand it could only be glimpsed from beyond the farthest extremes of existence. Even then, it was beyond Ahriman's ability to comprehend, its complexities too subtle, and its intrigues too tightly woven to be understood. Sickness built in Ahriman's belly. A bone-deep vertigo and a dizzying sense of falling. He struggled not to cry out. He was nothing to this universe. An insignificant grain amidst a desert of wind-scattered dust formed from the inconsequences of the galaxy. He was not special. He was not anything.
No!
I am Arzak Ahriman!
And with that thought, he was whole again. A warrior scholar of the Thousand Suns. He forced his mind into the second enumeration, where bodily concerns were put aside in favor of the pursuit of enlightenment. His body was gone. And in its place was a shimmer of light. A conglomeration of wheels turning within wheels. Eyes by the million, and a form as immaculate as it was unknown. This was the purest expression of his being, a creature of light and thought. The voice of Magnus came to him through senses unknown, each word freighted with terrible foreknowledge.
Come, my son. We will be thieves of revelation. See what I see, and tell me I am wrong to think beyond your concern.
Suddenly, Ahriman did not want to look. Once he looked, nothing would ever be the same. But he could not refuse his Primarch's demand, and the comfort of ignorance was something to be shunned. His shining body flew close to the radiant form of Magnus.
Show me everything.
Everything? No, not that. Never that. But I will show you enough.
Enough for what?
Enough to know that we still have a choice before us. One that will affect how we are remembered by the tides of history.
The stars wheeled around them, streaking by in a blur. They traveled at the speed of thought. And where thought willed them, they arrived in an instant. The sensation was spellbinding. Like gods, they bestrode the galaxy, traveling its length and breadth with each moment. Ahriman had just begun to appreciate the wonder of his Primarch's power when he realized that they had stopped moving. The world resolving around him in the familiar patterns of stars and the elliptical orbits of planets.
Where are we?
This is Swegalza, the carrion world of the Night Haunter, a place of murder and torment, where the screams of the dying are never ending. A place from which my brother wages a campaign of genocide. It is from here that he was sent to fight the First Legion of the Lion.
They spun through the system, past worlds dead and worlds ravaged by conflict, mayhem and the collateral damage of two legions at war. Ahriman felt his gaze drawn towards the system's edge, where a vicious battle raged in the void, two fleets battering at one another at close range. Intermingled warships engaged in broadside brawls, filling the space between them with high explosive ordnance and crisscrossing lasfire. Wrecks blazed from prow to stern and split apart as their keels broke under intense gravimetric pressures. Ahriman saw thousands of soul lights flickering out of existence, lives lost by the hundreds every second.
This is the death rattle of the Thramas Crusade.
Ahriman spun around the battle, a ghost of light bearing witness to the cold, airless slaughter. The black ships bearing the winged sword were in the ascendance, reaping a dreadful tally among the midnight ships of the Night Lords. But it seemed the Eighth Legion was not seeking a decisive engagement.
For 2 years, they have beaten themselves bloody against one another. But with this battle, the war is over, and my brothers retire to lick their wounds.
Who was the victor?
That remains to be seen. Though the Dark Angels still bear with them the seeds of their own destruction. In such times, can anyone be called the victor?
The heavens blurred again, and this time Ahriman felt resistance to their passage. One by one, the stars went out, snuffed like candles in a novitiate's dormitory, until all was darkness. Beyond the black curtain, Ahriman saw a burning world, cracked and ravaged by fire. Its continental plates had split apart, and an eightfold symbol was burned into its crust. Beyond this was a planet wreathed in a glittering corona of battle, a red world bathed in blood and madness. Ahriman made to fly onwards to see what new insanity was at play, but a gentle psychic pressure from Magnus halted him.
No, my son! To come any closer would see you tainted by the madness that would drag Sanguinius and his angels to their doom.
The Blood Angels destroyed?
Time will tell, for Sanguinius stands at a crossroads. He knows both paths end in blood, but he is stronger than anyone understands. Well, almost anyone. Guilliman knows, but even he does not truly know his brother's wounded heart.
The image of the blood-red planet faded, replaced by the vast gulfs of wilderness space between worlds. Emptiness that the human mind was incapable of grasping.
Why are you showing me this?
Because I will not be made a fool of again. Prospero burns because I thought I knew more than anyone else. If we are to choose a course for our legion, I would have it be the right one. And to that end, I travel the stars and time itself to find my brothers, to know with whom they stand.
Ahriman felt the emptiness around him grow ever more claustrophobic, like the walls of a meditation chamber inexorably closing in. What had felt unimaginably huge and spacious a moment ago now felt cramped and constricting.
That is the weight of our decision pressing in on us, Azek. War has come to the galaxy, a war like never before. And soon I will have to choose a side.
Why must you choose a side? We were betrayed by the Emperor, and Horus Lupercal has nothing to offer us.
Think you so? Then let me show you Ultramar.
The glittering form of Magnus flared brightly, dragging Ahriman in his wake as they plummeted through space once more. This time, they traveled to a blue world that withered in the hellstorm of its doomed star. Its cities were flayed by radioactive winds, and those souls not yet below in the subterranean arcologies were already dead.
I know this world. I came here after visiting the Crystal Library on Frandium. This is Kalth.
Ships of war scattered from the doomed planet. The gold and azure of the 13th Legion and the bruised red of the 17th. The Ultramarines' vessels regrouped, while the word-bearers used the chaos of battle's end to scatter into the darkness between the 500 worlds. Even as Ahriman watched, A storm exploded from the planet's surface, like the most terrible eruption on the surface of a star. Invisible to the naked eye, it was a vast outpouring of inchoate energies to those with a link to the ether. It engulfed Kalth, and soon spread beyond its system boundaries. A ruin storm of epic proportions that burned like a voracious forest fire. Uncontrolled, raw, and bleeding-edged, the storm tore through the immaterial realm without direction. A raging barrier of hatred and spite that was impassable to all but the most powerful individuals. The energies expended in its creation beggared belief, and Ahriman found it hard to comprehend that something so devastating could come about naturally. But who, except the Thousand Suns, had the power to summon anything like it?
They burned! Cast! For Monarchia?
Monarchia? No. Kalth was but a prologue. Lorgar's vision is grander and wider than the death of a single world. And the cold logic of Gilliman's practical is yet to play out in all its majesty and tragedy. Already the pieces are moving, and I sense that this will be the key to everything.
Lorgar dares to assault the 500 worlds. Has he gone mad? Gilliman's army is a legion. Lorgar could never defeat the host of Ultramar.
Glittering amusement passed through the luminosity of Magnus's form.
I will pass your sentiments to my brother when next I see him. After all, history teaches us that there is no such thing as an invincible army. But sometimes, history needs a push.
The Horus Heresy, Hunter's Moon, by Guy Haley. Performed by Gareth Armstrong, Angus King, and Toby Longworth. Directed by Christian Dunn.
Are the nets done, boy? Are the floats stowed? No more are broken? That glass costs more than your words. Yeah? Good. Sit down, then. We have some time before the tide is right. Oh, don't look so fearful, boy. You'll survive. Off old Van I learned the sea, as you're going to learn it from me. Be thankful. Van was the best. And his knowledge I give to you. Still frightened? You shouldn't be. I'll tell you a thing of old Van and how he died. There are worse things in this life than Felfins or Nautilons. Much, much worse. Let me tell of them. I know, because I was there the day the Hydra came to Pelago. I was on my 17th voyage, a boy not much older than you. So long ago now. But I remember it right enough. If only I could forget.
Wind teased curls of white from black water. Our boat rocked, gentle as your mother's arms. It was a peaceful night, a night for calm, after a hard day. The ocean is a bitter foe, but we had triumphed, we three, me, old Van, and Sario. Our baskets were full, not like the poor catches you see now, no. Our limbs ached with work well done, our hearts satisfied. All lived. A good day, boy. A good day. Then sat cross-legged in the cup of the hull, Sario by him, not far from where you're sat now, if you can imagine it. Their faces were craggy in the orange light of the boat's fireball. They enjoyed the warmth, enjoyed the motion of the steel-cored bundles as they rolled with the water. I was like you. I did not enjoy the night or the sea then. I gazed into the deep, terrified, yet entranced. It has that effect. You'll know soon enough. You'll see. Old Ven watched me.
Your cousin still fears the water, Sario. Even now.
There is much to fear. The ocean is not safe. If you taught me nothing else, you taught me that.
Still, if he feels that way, why become a fisher?
What else is there to do, Ven? He must fish, and he will starve.
Hey, young one. Come away from the side. We sail home tomorrow. Come and sit with us. Keep an old man company. I have heard all of Sario's stories before.
I will fetch him. Do you not hear our captain, Tidon? Come away now.
Down there, in the water. So much light. Are they spirits?
They are only sea lads. The actions of small creatures. That's all. They are harmless.
Something else you've learned in the Collegium?
Aye, something else I have learned. Now come, you dwell too much on fear. Let us rest and pass the time in pleasant company. For tomorrow we work hard. This catch won't salt itself.
I came reluctantly to the fire. Ven frightened me, if truth be told. So old and stern, never a smile. But I was young and foolish and did not see his wisdom until it had left this world.
You need not fear so much, young one. I have sailed these seas for 50 years, and no harm has come to me.
You are luckier than many.
Show some respect, cousin.
Oh, hush now. It's fine, Sario. I was terrified for many voyages, but I trust to my vessel. Nothing can hurt a man through steel cord. No, not if he sails well. And pays attention to what the ocean tells him. Now, look up. Go on. Look into the sky. You watch the lights in the water with fear. Now, you consider the men who sail the night in their ships of steel and fire. Do they fear the starlight up there? Theirs is the deadliest sea. Yeah. They come. They go. They ply their ocean as we ply ours.
They are safe in their vessels. But they are just men. They would be as afraid as I on this sea.
Oh, are you sure? The star giants are their allies. Yeah, I saw them once. Clad all in metal. And taller than the tallest man. They came to Pelago when I was a boy. I have never seen the light before or since. But although I am old now, it is not a memory easily forgotten. Now, how can you say that the off-worlders are just men when such giants serve them?
This is true. You saw the giants?
He saw them, all right. In the Collegium, there is a true picture of the giants. In this pic, there is a boy. He comes no higher than the knees of the visitors. It is our own Ven. Ven, standing with giants.
I have not been told this.
You do not ask, and so remain in ignorance. When you attend the Collegium, you will learn much. Why the lights shine in the sea, or why the sun rises, why the giants came to us.
It is so. Cousin, the engine of our boat, the clothes that you wear, that flashlight you so love, all things of wonder from the stars. But they work not for magic, but for clever artifice. You will learn all this, and more.
Aye. The old ways are dead. No gods in the sky or the sea now. Only giants.
I looked past the rising sparks of the fire into the night where the stars blazed thickly and thought of the giants in their skyships. I saw something there, a fast-moving light upon the horizon.
Captain! Look!
What?
A star! A falling star!
Steady, boy. My eyes are old. I cannot see.
There! Upon the morningward horizon!
I see it. It is growing closer. Do not leap about so, Tidon.
I paid no attention. I hurried back to the gunwale, my fear forgotten, and hung off the rigging.
I see it then.
We watched as the light grew to a ball of fire, big as a torch flame. The air itself trembled, Night gulls took flight from their watery roosts, and felfins fled the growing glare. The light roared overhead, smaller fires chasing it. Night turned to day. The ocean went from black to a sheet of rippled bronze. It was gone. A sheet of lightning lit up the sky. A single peal of thunder rolled. All returned to dark. Ben stood, hands on his stiff knees. The boat rocked as waves washed out from the distant impact.
That was no star. It was a sky ship. Come, we must go to them and lend what aid we can.
Dawn came, striping the sky with lashes of light. The ocean glowed orange, and amidst the patches of burning fuel was a blocky shape, hard lines all at odds with the curve of the waves. It filled me with great fear, but Ben sailed on, his hand steady on the tiller. Let me tell you, boy, myths and legends are one thing when in their proper place, but in front of you, like that, you'll never understand. We drew close. The skyship was dull blue, all streaked and scored. It lay canted at an angle, a skerry made all of metal. The prow of the ship was out of the water, a wheelhouse with many brilliant windows at the top. They glinted in the sun, scorched though they were. It dwarfed our fishing smack, 10 times its length, maybe 20. Its true size was hidden by the waves. Not even the biggest house in the village would have come close to it.
To the front, Captain. The wheelhouse. Let us look for a way in.
You're no expert in star vessels, cousin.
No, of Venice.
I am not. I have seen them but twice. I will bring us a little closer.
I see something. What is that, Ven? That sigil?
Describe it to me. All I can see is a smear of blue.
Blue it is. A field of blue with a many-headed serpent set upon it.
Are you sure?
It is blackened, but I'm sure.
Then it must be a badge of the legions.
The word was unfamiliar to me.
Legions?
The giants, Tito. Young fool, do you know nothing?
But why is it here?
I do not know. For that we must venture inside.
There then, there's a door.
I pointed out a square hatchway aft of the wheelhouse, made of the same metal as the hull, a perfect seal around it, made to keep out the cold night in the sky. Ben deftly brought us below the hatchway. The bulk of the ship glimmered in the dark water beneath our keel.
Sario, Teton, go in.
You will not come with us, Captain.
He looked doubtfully at me. He thought me too young. And I was.
If only I could. I am old. I will wait here. But I am still the best sailor. Each member of a crew must play to his own strength.
There was a roiling in the surface of the sea. Air bubbled from beneath the star vessel, carrying with it strange chemical smells. The Legion ship lurched, casting up a wave that sent our little boat bobbing away.
Go quickly. We have little time.
Van brought our boat into the skyship again. It gently kissed the hull of its distant cousin. I leapt first, for all my fear, and then came Sario. The hull was sloped enough that we could clamber easily to the door. It was surrounded by thick black and yellow striping and strange symbols. Some were pictographs, clear in purpose. Others stenciled boldly in the script of the giants.
What says this, cousin?
Sario stared, puzzling out the unfamiliar sounds.
Access hatch 4. These, they are instructions to work the door machinery.
A machine? Like our engine?
No, not alike. Different. Dangerous.
Can you open it?
He grabbed a handle sunk into a circular recess in the skin of the ship and tried to twist it round. It would not move.
The mechanism is not functioning. There are instructions. Stand back. The words say to stand back. No, Go further, behind that fairing. Careful you do not slip into the sea. There. Duck down. Cover your face. Do not be afraid of the noise. Now, I must turn this and depress this.
Shrill noise came from the downed ship's door. Sario ran to take refuge beside me. A smooth, metallic voice spoke.
Warning! Warning! Warning!
There were four flashes of fire. Smoke drifted on the breeze. I unwrapped my arms from my head.
Is it done?
Aye.
We went back to the door. The paint was marred by starburst patterns of black. Sario bent down and twisted the handle again. This time, it turned.
Now help me!
It's dark in there, Sario. How do we know it will not sink and drown us both? No! No, don't go in!
Stop being so foolish. I will not let you drown. It's perfectly safe. Follow me, cousin. Follow me.
I followed Sario into a short corridor, half lit by the wondrous lamps of the Imperium, some of which now burned erratically. The vessel sloped sternwards, and not far from the hatch, water lapped. Lost lamps shone greenly in the depths.
Don't be afraid. The giants will thank us. We are the rescuers. Think of that.
The light. The water.
Stay calm. The vessel is surely whole, and will take on water as readily as any craft of Pelago. We must hurry. There's no profit to be had going aft. Let us head upwards, to the wheelhouse. It is still above the water. The pilots might live.
We made for another doorway up the corridor. It was difficult going. The ship was wallowing, rolling onto its side, and we were forced to brace our feet against the wall and the deck and proceed like glimmer crabs picking over a reef.
Can you open it?
No. We must force it open. See, there are tools in that alcove there.
Here?
I scrabbled at a panel in the wall, painted over with strange words.
Aye.
Sario pushed me out of the way and pressed the panel's edge. It opened, and I looked inside.
Is there a pry bar teed on?
Yes, cousin.
The work was hard, the ship's interior close and hot. We sweated to pull the door open, finger width by finger width. Fearsome noises haunted the ship. But with Sario by me, I did not take fright. We squeezed through the gap we made. On the other side, the way was wider, set with rows of large seats facing each other. Between, two corpses lay on the deck, one in blue, one in grey.
They are so huge.
They are dead.
What happened?
They killed each other.
They were locked together, even in death. A knife jutted from a join in the blue giant's armor. What had killed the one in grey? I could not tell.
Why do they fight? I thought them all brothers.
I do not know, but it augurs ill. There is another door. Perhaps in there, in the wheelhouse, we will find answers.
We clambered over the corpses. The second door yielded as unwillingly as the first. The ship rolled further to starboard as we worked, spurring us to greater action. We forced it wide to reveal a broad cabin full of dead devices. Two massive forms were strapped into a pair of seats back to back by the fire-blacked windows. A pair of half-men, creatures of flesh joined with their machines, were also within. None showed any sign of life.
Is this the wheelhouse? I see no wheel. How does so large a ship sail with no wheel?
It's not a ship as you would understand it, cousin. It is science. The wisdom of the stars.
Sario made forwards, pulling himself up the sloping deck. Both the seated giants were in grey armor, hung all about with pelts and charms.
Such savages! Oh, they stink!
Their customs are different to ours. That is all. Look not to their trinkets. Look instead at the craft of their machines. And then tell me if it is they or us who are the savages. Help me here.
Sitting, their lifeless eyes were level with ours. I stood back as Sario fiddled around the base of the first giant's helm. He hit upon a catch, and it came free. He passed it to me. It filled my arms and was almost too heavy for me to carry. Beneath the helmet, the giant had a thick red beard and braided hair, and tattoos writhed over his face. The tips of long teeth protruded between his lips. Sario pressed fingers to the warrior's thick neck.
This one lives.
He went to the second and removed his helmet too, more quickly this time. It was only then that I saw the giant's blood staining the deck beneath our feet.
This one does not.
Sario was distracted, looking for some other sign of injury, and did not see the first giant move.
Sario!
A giant grabbed Sario's shoulder in one arm and gauntlet, forcing him to his knees.
What are you doing?
We are here to help. Oh, please, you are hurting him.
The giant looked down at Sario with puzzlement. He let go. Sario tumbled forwards with a gasp. The savage warrior slammed at the belts that crossed his body. He fell from his seat, stood unsteadily, and looked at us with pale yellow eyes.
Atmospheric re-entry. Too violent.
He shook his head. His long braids swung.
We have to get off the ship. We are sinking.
Sinking?
You're in the water. The oceans of Pelago. Follow us. Quickly now.
The grey warrior moved, falteringly. I cowered.
Come on, T-Don.
We pushed out of the wheelhouse. The gap we had made was not wide enough for the grey warrior, but he grasped the edge of the door and forced it back. We stumbled down the gangway over the corpses. The giant wrenched at the second door, and then his strength was spent. The slope was steepening, threatening to tumble us into the water below. The warrior stumbled. Sario steadied him on one side, I on the other. I dropped his helm.
T-Don!
I'm sorry.
The giant was so weak, but we pushed and pushed until he hauled himself up through the hatch and out into the sunlight. The giant staggered down the unsteady hull towards the fishing smack, then steered as close as he could.
Quickly, quickly!
Onto the boat, Sir Giant.
The warrior fell onto it, his weight lifting the stern out of the water, and lay still. Ben tried to rouse him, but he was unconscious. Instead, Ben wrestled feebly to pull the giant further on. The skyship was slipping lower into the ocean.
Get aboard! To the prow, both of you! Your weight might counterbalance his!
There may be more survivors.
You have no time! Must be away, or this wreck will drag us all down with it.
The lip of the open hatch reached the water. A foamy rush spilled over, and the ship began to sink faster. Sario shoved at me urgently, and I leapt the gap.
No, Sario! No! Sario!
It is his shoulder. The giant. He hurt him.
An error. It is only bruised. Come now, Tito. To the prow.
Our weight stabilized the boat enough so that Ben could work the engine. He swung us out and around, away from the skyship.
T-Don, raise the sail! We must be quicker!
I set the canvas swiftly, catching the wind. We drew away as the wheelhouse vanished under the water. The ocean boiled. Wave slapped into wave. Foam swirled. And then... there was nothing. As if the ship had never been.
The ocean takes everything. Even a skyship is no proof against it.
We set sail for home. Sario and I managed to get the giant further into the boat, and our ride became smoother. Day gulls wheeled, their cries like the cries of the dead upon the waves. I was seated by the giant. When he awoke, he groaned, sat and stared about him. He was fierce, his gaze uncompromising. None of us could hold it.
Where am I?
Pelago. Fifth world of the Son of Colin.
The giant stood,
Steel cord is a tough fiber, but the boat was flimsy beneath his great weight, and it rippled under his movement. He examined it, then the sea, then each of us, with a look of distaste.
A backwater world. Have you even acceded to compliance?
We have. We welcome you, our savior.
Welcome me not, for you do not know that what follows me. You, old one, you are the captain of this vessel?
I am Van. This is my sister's son and his cousin.
Saryu and I bobbed in turn. The grey warrior ignored our awkward bows.
Then I direct you to take me to the nearest point of Imperial authority. I have grave news that must be delivered.
We saw violence on your ship. The giant in blue...
The grey warrior whirled around. In one stride, he crossed the deck to where I stood, causing the boat to rock alarmingly. He towered over me. His lips drew back, showing the full inhuman length of his teeth. I and Saryu shrank away.
You will not speak of this to me again.
He turned away, leaving us gasping and afraid.
Make haste, little captain. Set your sail, or all is lost.
For the first day after his rescue, the Grey Warrior would not talk with us. He took little food and drank sparingly of our water. He evidently had some sea craft himself, for he remained out of the way as we went about our business. We were wary of this Lord of the Stars, who sat brooding over some unfathomable woe. Near noon on the second day, he suddenly broke his silence as we worked on the remainder of our catch.
You do not trust the water. To swim in these waters is to die, Sir Giant. Pelago is mostly ocean, and it is an ocean deadly to man.
The giant stirred himself and stood tall.
You unharmed, sir.
Thanks to you. You have saved my life. Normally that would suffice to put me in debt of honor to you. But I have seen things of late that have robbed me of my trust. I misjudged you, I misspoke, and I have abused your hospitality.
He locked eyes with Saryu, and this time my cousin did not look away.
I am mighty Torbjorn, company champion of four, renowned for my skill at arms, the breadth of the galaxy. My honor is my life, and I have sullied it. Let me make amends and labor beside you.
With that, he began to work. The giant was as good a sailor as any I've known since, and he told us that in his youth he had plied the seas at his far-off homeworld, seas even more deadly than our own. With his aid, we made good progress, and soon our catch was all salted in its barrels, the ship clean. When our course was set, he told us his story. A manner of story few are privileged to hear.
War rages in the heavens, little sailors. Brother pitted against brother. Foul treachery is at hand. The Imperium is ripped asunder.
We know nothing of it. We only knew of hope and of unity.
Hope is in battle. Unity is no more.
But there is perhaps a little comfort. My brothers have died, but not in vain.
We were sent by our father, Leman of the Rus, the Wolf King. In the wake of Magnus's perfidy, we went quietly, in fives and tens, to watch over the Primarchs of the Legions, the lords of those you call giants, and brothers to my Lord Rus. A guard of body in name, a guard of loyalty. My pack was to go to Alvarius of the Alpha Legion, those of blue you saw. We set out into the warp as doubt engulfed the stars. We could not know that Alvarius had already turned against our beloved Emperor. We were received as brothers by the remnants of the 88th Expedition, feasted and honored. Into the Primarch's presence we came, 3 days after our arrival. He was a lesser being than our own lord. Not much bigger than his sons, with a troubled face under a drawn brow. Would I have marked his perturbation well then? My brothers would not have died. I am Alpharius, he said. To what do I owe the honor of a guard of the sons of the Rus?
His words were hard, and only then did I know he saw through our purpose. Our ruse was distasteful to us, but not dishonorable. We were there to guard him if he proved true, and, if not, to act in guard of the Imperium. There is no higher calling than that. He bade us kneel, but we did not. For the Vilka Fenrika are proud, and our lord is more than the equal of a Farius. This angered him. He was ignoble and rash. He railed against us, shouting imprecations for our rightful scouring of Prospero. And then, his sons attacked. Brother Egil died first, his armor split by bolts. Then Grimthir, though he accounted for two of theirs before he fell. Six of us remain, hemmed in by the Alpha Legion, high in the galleries about us. They underestimated us. Theirs is the way of stealth and manipulation. Ours is that of open battle and of fury. We fell hard among them, blades swinging, howling out our wrath and sorrow. Hengist died, then Salagrim. But the traitors paid the blood price for their deaths. I fought. My brothers Engal, Gunnir, and Holdar at my side. We closed so they could not bring their bolters to bear, for we are their betters when it comes to blade sating. Holdar and Engal gained the stairs to the gallery, staying the storm of fire with their corpse makers. I and Gunnir faced their lord. We are the Legiones Astartes, space marines of the Emperor, Wolfguard, and the favored sons of Rus. But he was mightier still, a Primarch. Gunnir rushed in first, axe descending. With one sweep of his arm, Alpharius knocked him down. I pressed my own attack, sword in hand. Together, we dueled. Long did our fight proceed, a blur of weapon and might's art that I will never again experience. If that is to be my last battle, so be it. For it was a contest worthy of the sagas. I have been unmatched in war, but I could not prevail there alone. Gunnir saw his chance. He re-entered the fray, curving his axe down at the traitor's leg. He lost his life for it, but distracted our foe long enough. I ended Alpharius with my pistol. Primarch or no, he died by my hand. A bolt in his head.
What happened then?
We fought free, the three of us, to their embarkation decks, where we seized a Stormbird dropship. It was a miraculous escape. But we scout through an asteroid field like chastened dogs until we arrived here. And their final surprise was sprung. For a pair of them had stolen on board with us. As Holdar battled one within the ship, the other sabotaged the engines, and we were clawed down into the well of your planet's gravity. I know little of star vessels. Did you sail upon the tides of the warp? No. We did not venture into the Imperium. A Stormbird has no such capability, little captain.
But that means...
Yes, I am sorry. The traitors are coming here. Nevertheless, hope remains. I sent a message to my kin. They come also.
We spoke little as we sailed the final day. A storm beset us, and our attentions were focused on our craft. Torbjorn stood at the prow, weathering all that the sea could throw at us. Our fears did not subside with the tempest. With clear night skies, we glanced often to the stars, seeking movement. The sky ship came as we approached land the next morning. A small cove, not far from this village. You know it, don't you, boy? You have seen the stone cairn there. I know you've broken the ban and gone to sea. What young man would not? The craft flew in from the sun, roaring round the headland as it slowed its approach.
The wolf's head, Sir Giant! They carry the emblem of a wolf's head!
It is one of our craft, the Hunter's Moon. My brothers are here.
Sir, carry the boat into the shore and we jump down, pulling it out of the waves. Torbjorn did not lend his strength to ours. He stared at the skyship at the edge of the dunes, apprehensive.
Something is not right.
The ramp opened. Out strode six giants, clad in rich indigo blue. Their leader was ornately attired, bareheaded, his scalp gleamed coppery in the sun.
It cannot be! I slew you!
Torbjorn reached for a pistol that was no longer there. The other giant raised his gun. Pray you never hear that sound, boy. The terrible, terrible sound of Legion weaponry. Then was right by me one moment, and the next he was gone. Scraps of his flesh spattered over me as he collapsed into the surf. Sario turned to flee, but his arm was blasted from him, his body shredded, and he fell.
Die, traitor!
Torbjorn ran at the giants in blue as they all opened fire upon him. He made it less than 10 paces before he was cut down. Torbjorn had fought his last. No more guns spoke. I opened my eyes. The remains of my cousin and my captain rolled in the rush of the tide at my feet.
No! No!
The leader leveled his gun at me, its muzzle of black eyes staring the promise of death. I shook with terror. For an age, I waited to die. Then, he smiled right at me, cruelly, as if I were nothing but a joke to him. He put up his weapon and marched back up into the skyship. The others followed, sparkling in the sunlight, the jeweled eyes of a many-headed serpent emblazoned upon their armor plates transfixed me as they left. I did not dare move as the skyship lifted from the ground and flew from my sight.
Much to my shame, I survived, boy. The giants never returned, but I will never forget that day. That golden afternoon of bloody surf haunts my nights still. I tell you, whatever fear you may have for the ocean, there are far worse monsters swimming in the sky's night. I know, because I have seen them. I was there the day the Hydra came to Pelago.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.